Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Connor. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl.
Well, it's good to know. It's good to hear. And I have a very special guest on the line, and I don't want to miss out on any time with him. It is none other than the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. He is a candidate for the state Supreme Court. I'm moving faster than I should, but hopefully in time we will be talking about him and being a candidate for the United States Supreme Court. Good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
How you doing, sir? So glad to be here with you this morning.
It's always good to have you on the line. Let me, how's the campaign going?
You know, I'm feeling really excited about, you know, being able to bring our message to our entire state and, you know, really spending time, you know, in Milwaukee and, you know, Kenosha, Racine, all the way up to, you know, Barron County, you know, Walworth counties. And, you know, really just letting people know that what justice can look like and giving people a choice. And I think that is where we're at today. It's about establishing that choice and letting people know that justice can look a lot different than what we currently looks like to us.
So let me ask you, when you talk about justice and what that looks like, when we're talking about the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, that's supposed to be nonpartisan. It can't be justice if it's partisan, can it?
I will say this, that the intent of it being nonpartisan is to make sure that there's no influence that a political party will have on the decisions that are being made and coming from the bench. You know, that's a critical foundational piece. But what we're seeing is how the partisan nature of our, you know, the partisan nature which you have to kind of almost fall into in order to run and be successful is seeping its way into decisions. And, you know, individuals, you know, similar to, you know, Justice Hagedorn, who may kind of go back and forth based on the factual case, that kind of justice is demonized, you know, by a base, right? When he's really that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to, you know, listen to the facts and be moved by the facts, not these other things.
You know, Judge Mitchell, I've been around for a while in this state, and I have listened to the last four or five conservative justices who wound up becoming justices, who have been influenced by conservative talk radio, who basically were pushed and supported by conservative talk radio, and the fact that they have allowed the influences of people who sit in the position that I'm sitting in to determine the outcomes of cases. That's not the way it was set up, is it? Or was it?
No, I don't. But, you know, like, again, I'll say that the behind-the-scenes approach of if you're trying to, you know, run for these kinds of positions is that, you know, it went from the total cost of running a Supreme Court campaign was $37,000 in 2003. Now, you know, now they talk about upwards of $10 to $15 million in order for you to run. Like, you know, it's because people want to buy that influence. And it's not new. There's this book that I read back in the day called Blocking the Courthouse Door. And it talked about the process by which certain political groups were using influence to buy not only federal courts, but also state Supreme Courts, especially after to try to influence how courts ruled on medical malpractice. But the book was fascinating because it showed a strategy of making sure that certain places and certain candidates were being put in position because they wanted to be able to anticipate a certain ruling coming from the bench.
You know, Judge Mitchell, I constantly talk about our government that is supposed to be a representative government. It's supposed to represent the people. And yet you find out that even though the people vote and elect people and put them in positions of leadership and power, in far too many cases, those people who are elected by the citizens of this country don't get representation because lobbyists and others, because of their sheer financial wherewithal, are the ones who control what happens in the society. And it is frustrating, to say the least, sir, because you even see those influences on the state and United States Supreme Court.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, these opportunities, like, you know, me running as a young black man is very important, because it demonstrates to people that, you know, if we want something different, we have to have people who have the courage and strength to step into the void, especially those who have a heart for people, everyday people who come from, who have an experience of working from the bottom up and really want to work hard to use the power of these positions to really influence good policy, but more so to give people back a sense of what is possible, you know, when we work together. So it's important. I think when I think about and reflect on Selma, you know, obviously I wasn't alive during Selma, but I look at those videos, and when you walk the bridge, you get a sense that the struggle has been entrenched in people, and that people fought for the ability for us to be able to do some fantastic things by exercising our voice and our vote. But if we ever get comfortable, then we will retreat back to a place where they will find different ways to minimize the power of both the vote and the voice. So, like, for example, I tell my young people, you know, while we're trying to work on them stop stealing cars, I sit them down and I explain to them. I say, I want you to understand one critical thing. You stealing this car and you will be charged with a felony. And many of you at 16 will be charged with an adult felony at the age of 16 years old. That means that you will not be able to exercise your vote at the age of 18 when you're legally able to be able to do so. So you're not just losing a right. You're losing a right before you even have an opportunity to exercise that right. For what reason? And so that was, you know, I started getting their attention because nobody's telling them about that their voice is important, but I'm telling them their voice and their vote is significant. And if we got a whole generation locked up or even locked out, then that means our democracy is not moving in the way it should move.
You know, Judge, there, the way the makeup of the state Supreme Court is right now, it's considered four conservative-leaning, you know, jurists and three, you know, liberal, so to speak. And so that's
why you say so to speak.
Well, that's what they say. I won't go there. Let me say this to you. What I'm looking at and what bothers me and what has bothered me for a long time is that I've seen the influence and the decision making in the state under the guise of the conservative Supreme Court. And I haven't seen where it's benefited the average person. It's not because I'm not a conservative. But again, I've been around here a long time. I've been in the state for 68 years. And so I've seen it. And it's so frustrating to me that you can't have people look at these things without them having a jaundiced eye. I thought the Supreme Court was not supposed to be that way. It was supposed to be a system that governs, you know, what happens in the society, but from a fair and balanced perspective. Is that asking too much?
No, I think that's, I mean, that's basically what our Constitution mandate really is, to make sure that it's the third branch of government that provides a constitutional check on those things that violate the basic rights of the Constitution or statute. And when there is conflict among different courts, the Supreme Courts are there as an appellate body to review those courts' decisions so that we have some consistency among how laws should be interpreted and people's lives lived out. So that is the way it's supposed to function. I think the second part is the question I think people are asking when they say, well, what does it benefit us? Because what it also can do and should do is to provide leadership to our other court systems so that they could address the detailed things that are happening within their communities in a way that is meaningful, that is just, that is fair. And a lot of what you are expressing is a sentiment that a lot of people do not see court systems still, even in your experience, 68 years, and mine 45, as fair and just. They see it just as another tool of racism, of oppression, rather than seeing it as a gateway for fairness and justice.
Go ahead.
No. So that's why I think, you know, your words are true. I think there's a lot of sentiment of that kind of frustration living within the lives and hearts of people every day.
So I'm not going to lie to you. I want to see as many of us who've been around a while, a black face as a on the state Supreme Court, just like many of us wanted to see. Wanted to see a black face on the United States Supreme Court, but I forgot Clarence Thomas was there. prior to, I'm sorry. I want to see, you know, in my lifetime, a black person on the state Supreme Court. You know why? Because we deserve that. It's not that you're going to or you're going to look at things from the perspective of black and white, but it's unfortunate sometimes that color that matters so much in this society when we don't see it in the highest seats in the land. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. He's a candidate for the state Supreme Court. Judge Mitchell, how does the Supreme Court determine what cases to listen to? There's so many of them, and sometimes as I've been watching the ones that they've chosen in Wisconsin over the decades, it's always frustrated me. But how do they determine which cases are the ones that the most important to hear?
Well, in general, it only takes three justices to decide to take on a case. So people can petition. Generally it happens through, circuit court, then maybe appellate court. And if there are contrary different laws or decisions between appellate courts, then they may decide to take, a case in order to kind of resolve the conflict. There are certain cases where people will appeal directly. I think you saw that during the COVID, where the legislature was basically, going directly to the Supreme Court, not going through circuit courts, going straight directly to the Supreme Court. But it only takes three of them to be able to to accept the case. So if you have, you know, three justices who want to take the case, then that's what happens.
Even though the majority is not, that's the minority of the Supreme Court, the seven. So does that make sense that only three can determine that when a majority of the court may not support that?
Well, I think it's always meant to allow for a balance, right? So let's say, for example, you do have, a conservative bent, but you have three, you know, justices who feel like this is an issue that need to be brought up.
Okay.
That are in the minority. And so it allows for them to still be able to bring their case, even though they may not have the majority in that situation. And they may not win or, you know, have the majority when after the facts are taken up and the decision is rendered, but at least allows for them to be able to have their case brought up to be heard, or at least be, you know, examined to be heard before the Supreme Court.
So you're educating us, you're educating me. So when you got a circuit court and an appellate court, and these particular judges are appointed by Democrats, by Republicans, depending on who's in office at that point in time, and clearly they put judges on that are going to lean to their beliefs. Is that then why the Supreme Court is there? One of the reasons, because on those local and state levels, decisions can be rendered that may be biased?
I mean, the reality is, Ingram, I would say that, you know, I have colleagues that are Republicans, I have, you know, colleagues that are Democrats and some that are independent, and for the most part, partisanship, especially at a circuit court level, and I would say it's a certain level to a degree at an appellate level, most of them are not the kind of individuals who allow their partisanship to influence their daily workings of how they are working with individuals. And so what you see at the Supreme Court level is really because there's so much attention from these outside groups to support individuals who have a certain perspective, and that's both on the left and the right, though, Brother Ingram.
Right.
That it almost, to the outside public looking in, seems to suggest that this is all about who has the money to buy the individual who will be in that seat. And I can tell you that as a candidate who's running outside some of the institutional people would like, as a black man, I can say to you that, you know, that it does resonate that there are always ways in which they try to attack candidates who don't fit those profiles. So if you're going to be too independent, or you're going to really make sure that you are going to listen to the facts, follow the law, and make sure that you're not bought off, then you have to make sure that you have a coalition of people who will support that perspective so that you have enough votes to be able to overcome the spending that will be done against you or the negative campaigns that will be done against you.
You know, Judge Mitchell, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to talk a little bit about a negative article that was printed in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel a couple weeks back about you, and I for those who are listening who may just accept that as truth, I think I would be remiss if I didn't give you an opportunity to clarify, what it is that has been said. So people can hear it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, as opposed to people who want to slander you for political reasons. Is that all right?
Oh yeah, man. I have nothing to hide. Never did. You know, as I told the reporter, and I appreciate you giving me the opportunity because, you know, this is something that my liberal opponent out of Milwaukee and her team did to try to scare people away from supporting me.
And let me do this because we've got to go to a break and I don't want to have to interrupt you. See you, Cassandra, and we'll certainly be coming to you. We got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. The Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell is on the line. He is a candidate for the State Supreme Court. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. He's willing to take some questions. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell, who's a candidate for the State Supreme Court. Before we went to break, Judge Mitchell, I was talking about an article that appeared in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel several weeks back that basically talked about an incident between you and your ex-wife. And so briefly, we've got callers who want to have a question with you. But if you will briefly go through what took place, what transpired.
This incident happened in 2007. I moved here to Wisconsin to support her. As she was getting her doctorate, you know,
my ex-wife.
Yeah, we met at Spelman. She was at Spelman. I was at Morehouse. So I moved here as she was finishing her doctorate. And in March of 2007, her sister, Morgan Geis, who was a senior at Purdue University, was tragically killed by a drunk driver while she was on spring break in Florida. And the grief of losing my sister-in-law sent my ex-wife's mental health into peril. Because of that, I ended up needing to take care of my daughter, our daughter at 2 years old. I ended up, homeless and just tell people, hurt people always hurt other people. I didn't do anything to hurt my ex-wife, never would have. I did everything I could to make sure that our daughter was taken care of while she still healed from her mental health break and the grief of losing her sister. And that took her a long time to come to realization that her sister was gone and to deal with that grief.
As anybody would.
And so, yeah, I mean, if you knew Morgan, you knew she was like a light. Like, she was a thing that, she was like the center of the family. Like, she was most wonderful, most beautiful soul. And to have her taken away by a drunk driver, like, it was just a phone call. Like, it wasn't cancer. It was just, she was here on Thursday and she's gone on Friday. And my ex-wife's mental health decreased. And so, my role was to be a great father, to be a support until she no longer felt, she could be in our relationship. But that did not mean that I needed to turn and be vicious to her. It just meant that I needed to raise my daughter and continue to raise my daughter. And that's what I did. She was eventually, her mental health was compromised such that she took my daughter out of the state and wouldn't bring her back. And then I had to go get the help of police to go get my daughter and get my daughter back and bring her back to Wisconsin where she was supposed to be.
You know, Judge, and I would say this. I don't think you need to go any deeper because your ex-wife clearly has said that she was at a bad place at that point in her life, and she has certainly recovered and is supporting you. So my thing is, what are they talking about, man?
Yeah, it's just a hit, man. Yeah, all the way back to the birth of a nation. All you got to do is say something sexual, black man, and then it puts people in fear. Not to talk, and the only person who benefits from this is my liberal opponent. The Republicans wouldn't try to hit something like this until like a week before the general election. But it is a reminder to me, and it should be to you, that this is what they do in our state to black candidates. And then they use this as a tactic to intimidate us to get out the way. And this is what they were thinking that they were going to do to me. But I'm telling you right now, I don't bend. I don't break. I've been through worse. So the goal for me is to make sure that our state, and particularly Milwaukee, is given the choice of a competent, strong, black leader who is going to be able to be representative and stand with our entire state.
All right, let's do this. Let's go to Cassandra from Madison. Hey, good morning to you, my friend. How are you? Thank you very much. You have a question or comment for Judge Everett Mitchell.
Yes, I do. Earl, thank you so much for taking my call. And I just have a couple of things to say, and I hope you will give me be a little more generous with your time here. First of all, Daniel Bice, when I heard about the allegations, I instantly knew that it was a column written by Daniel Bice. He is one of the most irresponsible journalists in our state, and it is a absolute pity that he has been employed by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel as a professional journalist. And one thing I want to note, and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they are doing a disservice to voters in the state. When you log onto the internet and you try to read that article, it's protected by their paywall. When you make allegations, when you publish allegations against a candidate, in my opinion, they should remove the paywall so everyone could read the allegations.
Agreed.
And adjudicate that information for themselves. That would be the fair, balanced, and responsible thing to do for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and they're not doing it. My second point that I would like to make against the Journal Sentinel is that they need to discuss what were the investigative methods that they used to vet these allegations. Is it only a single source, or did they speak to a number of sources to confirm the information? If it's just a single source, it's gossip, and that it should be in no way published in the information, published in the newspaper. Dan Bice has never, ever followed investigative practices by vetting his information. He is a horrible journalist. Now, the third point I'd like to make, any kind of allegations that are made during a divorce or a child custody hearing, they should be viewed with some caution. That's a period of times when both parties are very heated at the moment. And so, and then, Earl, I just have one last
quickly.
Okay. I would like to know if Everett Mitchell intends to hire clerks for his Wisconsin Supreme Court as a justice. We went through 30 years of Ruth Bader Ginsburg on the U.S. Supreme Court. She never hired an African-American law court clerk. We need law black clerks to build as a farm team for the future judicial field. And so, Prosail, which I don't know her record, but if she has not mentored any black lawyers, she is not getting my vote.
Cassandra,
and Mitchell, you need to hammer home on that.
Thank you very much, Judge Mitchell. You say what?
I mean, that's my whole plan, is to make sure that I use my power to always hire, diverse and black and diverse candidates, especially those of color, to be able to be that. I've been a mentor to a lot of lawyers who've gotten them into law school. I've, went over essays, mentor young lawyers in school and then after their careers, and I continue to mentor them today. And I'm mentoring young ones now because I want them to be able to be a part of the judiciary and know that this is a possible place for them to, focus their careers.
Let's go to David from Mequon. Hey, good morning to you, David. You have a question or comment for Judge Mitchell?
Thanks, Earl, for taking my call. I just wanted to make A quick comment and see what Judge Mitchell has to say in regards with what I'm going to say here. So to my understanding, there was a, both you and some of the other people are going for the Supreme Court, there was a debate of some sort, and your other opponent, one of the other opponents that was Janet, I'm not sure.
Protasiewicz,
yeah. She repeatedly was talking about how she would essentially vote on things. And, you know, I just don't understand, because I heard clips, and from what I understand, you know, that's a violation of the Code of Judicial Conduct, because she's literally giving her opinion, you know, before it even gets to her, and you're not supposed to do that. So I was very surprised to hear that, because that's just something you just don't do. It's a manifest bias, more or less. So I'm just curious to see what Judge Mitchell has to say in regards with that.
Thank you very much for the call, Dave. Judge Mitchell.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. I mean, she was telegraphing in front of everybody while on TV, you know, legislative things related to, you know, issues that may come before our court. I think it's fair to us to give some analysis to, you know, Supreme Court cases that have already been decided, but in many ways to talk about why and how you would rule on certain cases, you know, it diminishes our ability to talk about what fairness and independence should look like. Nobody should anticipate what we will rule. They should anticipate that they will be given a fair and just opportunity to present the facts that they have made, and that we will follow the law, the Constitution, in a manner that is consistent with the rule of law that we have, that is established for us to follow. So he's correct about that. That's why I've always focused on making sure that people know my record of always being fair and balanced and not being bought. You have to wait until you hear the facts. You can't predetermine a case. And the moment that you do predetermine a case, you've already lost the integrity of the court. The integrity of the court has been compromised.
You know, Judge Mitchell, Judge Janet Protasiewicz, whom I know pretty well, has, and whom I've supported in the past, early in her career. And she clearly is the organization that is running her campaign, clearly is a well-heeled, well-known political juggernaut when it comes to elections and the finances that they have and know-how and wherewithal and all those things, at times to me, don't point to the best person, not saying that she's not a good person, talking about the organization that is running her campaign, that certainly has the political know-how. And to me, that doesn't always represent what's in the best interest of everybody, that you've got a powerful juggernaut that's financially well-heeled, that can you know, influence decisions on, you know, how somebody votes, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, whoever that may be. To me, it shouldn't be about the financial aspect of it. That's why I always said, Democrat or Republican, we've got well-heeled Democrats who can control outcomes. So you are certainly going to be outspent. There's no question that your coffers are going to be the worst of your other three candidates. Just a fact. How do you overcome that?
Well, I think that's where you rely on people power. That, you know, they may have influence, but the way of
the way in which you overcome that is to be to really organize grassroots campaigning, to go on radio stations like this, to get people thinking about Bell Voice, to encourage people to do their own Google research to make sure that they can understand, to work with our faith partners, our nonprofit faith partners, community leaders, grassroots organizations, to make sure that you're engaging every community, LGBTQ+, our Latino, Hmong, Indigenous communities, especially in our Black communities in our state, and letting them know that this is completely possible, that you should not make election decisions on 30-second campaign ads, that you really want to make sure that you are supporting somebody who's done something in the community to support people and make justice real for people. And well, we can always talk about that work.
Well said. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. My guest is Judge Everett Mitchell, candidate for state Supreme Court. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is the Honorable Judge Everett Mitchell. He is a candidate for the state Supreme Court. You know, Judge Mitchell, when you look at everything that's being done to prevent people from voting, not only in this country, but especially in this state, especially people of color, clearly we know, we've seen the impact, the outcome of that, even in this latest Senate race, United States Senate race, the fact that so many less people of color voted, especially blacks, and in many instances, 37,000 less votes than cast in 2018. We know the reasons why. It's because of all of the planks that they put in place to make voting more difficult. What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I think about the article that was came out, was it yesterday, that talked about one senator bragging about the fact that they were able to, you know, reduce the amount of votes that came out of Milwaukee so that they could be able to sway the election. I mean, if there isn't any, I mean,
Bob Spindale. Bob Spindale is his name, but go ahead.
Yeah, so people can speculate, you know, and feel like, oh, this is true, but then when you have somebody who actually articulates it in a manner, in an email, and, you know, it reminds us that this stuff is real and that there are people who are actively working every day to ensure that voices and votes are not allowed to be able to participate in the modern democracy. And so I just think it should make us wake up to say, all right, how are we educating ourselves? How are we educating our community? How are we got to stay civically engaged? Because as Justice Ginsburg said, the subtle second generation attempts to limit voting are no longer subtle. And people are out the box letting you know that they have strategies to reduce your capacity and to reduce all of our capacities to be able to participate in this democratic process. And without our vote is basically removing your voice. I can't tell you, Brother Ingram, I go to a lot of barbershops and cookouts and meets and greets with different people, one of the things that always comes up is this idea that I don't vote because it doesn't matter.
Right.
And what I said to them, I said, listen, your vote matters, because without your vote, I'm not a judge in Dane County. If I'm not a judge in Dane County, I'm pushing the issue to take handcuffs off of children, to make sure that the system related to court-ordered children, they get the education they need, mental health services that they need. And without your vote, I'm not there to be able to represent and do those things, for not for Dane County, but also for our entire state. So it does matter. You just have to make sure that you are having conversations with people who you put in that position of power so you can hold them accountable for your vote and your voice at the same time.
You know, Judge Mitchell, and if it didn't matter, why are they working so hard to take it away?
Yeah,
That's the thing. They are working super diligently because they know if they take it away, they know we will be left without anything. And they know that they can then put in, candidates that reflect their values rather than candidates who will work for the people. That's the biggest fear, is not having candidates of color. What they're afraid of is having candidates who will work for the people. That's their greatest fear.
You know, I do, and because I have the same conversations with people, and I always say to them, if it did not matter, they would not be working as hard as they are to take away your right to vote. The other part of it, Judge Mitchell, is that, you know, in a representative government, we've got to make sure that the people that we have in these positions represent us. I mean, mm-hmm. come on. We've got enough of people who we elect, and I'm not talking about people of color. I'm talking about people of the state of Wisconsin, all of us, who send yeah. people to places and in leadership, and then we don't get what we deserve. And anybody that you vote for, you best believe that where we make mistakes, in my opinion, Judge Mitchell, is not holding those people accountable. And then we get frustrated when we say, well, they're not doing what we want them to do. If you don't hold their feet to the fire, they're not going to do what it is you want them to do. They're going to allow somebody else who, you know, kind of butters their bread because mm-hmm. they want to stay where they are.
They won't stay with us. And that's the thing. That's the reason I started with this idea that justice is not what you say. Justice is what you do. And so before you give people power, they need to have demonstrated to you that they've done something, because the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And so if they haven't been committed to doing things before you give them the power to do so, don't assume that when you give them the power to do so, that they then go reflect your values. So that's why I tell people all the time, you know, people could feel assured that as a judge, I would do what I said I'm going to do, because I did it before people gave me power. When I was just working with men and women coming out of prison, building a successful program for ex-offenders so that they could get back on their feet and we could keep our community safe, reducing the recidivism rate from 70% down to 15%. And that program that I created over, 16 years ago is still a staple program here in Dane County, helping all kinds of men and women. That is the kind of legacy that you want to leave behind, but it also informs how you then move forward with your work when people give you the power to do so.
You know, Judge Mitchell, we got 1 minute. It's yours.
So let's go to my website, Judge Mitchell for Justice. If this is impactful for you, go ahead, hit that endorsement button, put your name on that endorsement list so that I can know and I can list all the wonderful people throughout our beautiful state that feel encouraged by this. Don't allow those negative ads to deter you, because that is what they're trying to do, because they're truly afraid of a voice of someone who's going to stand up for all Wisconsinites and stand up for all people. And if anything else, you know that Judge Mitchell will be the one who is willing to fight for every voice, because I know what that feels like to be accused of something you didn't do, and know that I'm willing to stand and continue to fight for what our democracy and our court system should, must, and be like for all Wisconsinites.
Judge Mitchell for Justice is the site. Is that right?
Judge Mitchell for Justice.
All right. So listen, thank you as always. We're going to do it again and again and again. Listen, you are a man of conviction, and that's what we need more of in politics. Can I call? Are you running for judge? Is it still politics, or is it politics?
No.
Which one is it?
It's politics.
We got to go. Thank you very much, my friend. I'll certainly be in touch, as always. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, Brother Ingram.
Thank you,
Wisconsinites. Thank you.
Yeah,
all right.
Judge Everett Mitchell, we've got to go to a break. I'm going to be joined after the break by another good friend, Joe McNally, all the way from Virginia, is going to be joining us. Be right back.